poverty-stricken owners in the hopes that pet and owners can remain together. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, vice president for community and government relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, my guests are a very special group, people who have successfully transitioned from foster care into college and those who help them. College is challenging enough if you have a home to return to on breaks and financial support from a family. Imagine being declared an adult at 18, living on your own, and trying to navigate a system that is set up for students from traditional families. May is Foster Care Awareness Month, and Education Matters wanted to be among the first sources of your awareness as we enter the month of May, and to put voices and names to the idea of foster care, as well as what happens to young adults who are raised in foster families. So my first guest is Abby Austin. She is a senior at the University of Wisconsin-Stout in the BS Psychology program with a concentration in criminal justice and rehabilitation. After being placed in foster care at 14, she joined the Fostering Success program on campus to use her lived experience to improve the lives of students who experienced the same struggles as she did, while becoming a peer mentor and working on numerous Fostering Success camps to introduce higher education opportunities to those transitioning out of the Wisconsin foster care system. Welcome, Abby. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Andrew Bridge grew up in foster care from age 6 to 8. He went on to graduate from Wesleyan University on a full scholarship and then Harvard Law School. He is a children's rights lawyer who has worked with foster care systems across the country to improve lifetime outcomes for children in state care, including with colleges and universities to improve admissions and graduation rates for older foster youth and young adults. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Okay, and Gail Mensel is an advocate for improving college access and graduation of Wisconsin's former foster youth, homeless youth, and orphans. Gail has 20-plus years of experience in higher education as in admissions, financial aid, instruction, and advising, including 8 years supporting this vastly underrepresented, academically talented, and deserving student population. The value of investing in post-secondary success of these student populations is compelling. Their presence improves the educational experience on our campuses, strengthens our communities, improves Wisconsin's workforce and economy, and changes the trajectory of future generations. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you.
Just a side note, Gail and I are both proud 1983 Green Bay Preble High School graduates. Go Hornets.
Right?
Okay. So our listeners, I'm really excited to share this with you. Andrew, I wonder if you could just start by telling us some basic information about youth and foster care and what typically happens when they turn 18.
Absolutely. So children turn age 18 while they're still in care really face the toughest outcome of all kids who ever enter the foster care system. What it means is that these children have been taken from their families. They've not been returned to their families. They've not been adopted. They have not received guardianship. And so reaching 8 to 18, they have very likely to have no stable adult in their lives. What also means when looking at what's happened to them while they're in care is they're likely to have changed schools at least 7 times, missed twice as much school as their peers who aren't in foster care. 1 in 5 are likely to be homeless at age 18 instantly. 75% will have had no meaningful work experience, and by the time they do find a job, they're likely to be earning half of what their peers are earning.
Wow. Abby, does anything sound familiar in this description, since you're someone who was in foster care as a young adult?
Absolutely. Andrew brings up a lot of great points that I see talked about a lot. Everyone's experience in foster care is different. It's incredibly intersectional. It's incredibly varied. So, you know, there's worst case and best case scenarios. And unfortunately, we do see, especially in rural Wisconsin, we deal with a lot of those incredible worst case scenarios. I personally, even just from my childhood before foster care and then aging out of the system at 18, I went to, if I'm remembering correctly, about 14 different schools. So that's about double. And, you know, part of that was foster, part of that was just my childhood. And you'll see that obviously adverse childhood does influence the outcome of a child going into the system. And you do have that homelessness component. In some cases, there are, you know, family, whether that's adoptive or previous foster care parents, or you do have biological parents who are sometimes involved. But again, that also varies. And then if you don't have that, if you don't have any relatives, then you are genuinely stuck. In rural areas like this, we often see transportation as an issue. We see wages as an issue. And we see lack of available housing, especially in markets that are saturated by student-only housing opportunities. You know, why would a foster care previous youth who's not going to college want to room with a bunch of college students? How would that work? How would they make those connections? So a lot of, I mean, and there's more and more and more that I could even say about that. But, you know, as a former foster youth, that's pretty much hits it right on the head.
Well, thank you for doing such a great job of representing foster youth, even though, as you said, their experiences vary a lot. So I'm sure there are people listening to this who say, well, you know, I didn't go to college or my grandkids can't afford it or whatever. So I want to hear a little bit about what are some of the reasons why we should want foster youth who are interested in going to go to college. What are the benefits to them, to other students, and to society? That's probably a good one for Gail.
Thanks, Karen. And you're absolutely right. Not every foster youth is on a path or is interested and maybe finds college a good fit for them after high school. And that's going to be the same as their peers, right? So not everyone in high school has the same desire to go to college after graduation. But what we've found from the statistics is that the foster population actually has a high level of students that would like to enroll in college. It's estimated at about 79 or 80% of high school foster youth aspire to attend college. Unfortunately, only about 20% make it to that point of enrollment. And then of that 30%, or 20%, I'm sorry, only about 3% graduate. And the, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about the barriers once they arrive on campus at some point in this conversation. But the reality is that in Wisconsin particularly, we keep hearing how we need to bolster the, you know, the employment in our state, and we need college educated, both technical college and four-year college grads in our state for all the jobs that we have available. And this population is underrepresented and clearly wants to enroll, but that process is basically beyond challenging. And maybe Abby can talk a little bit about that path from high school into college. And I think her situation was pretty good, but for students who don't have, haven't been raised in a family of a support system that is helping guide their high school experience and guide their choices after high school and helping them with the application process, the financial aid process, the visiting campus process, the registration process, that transition is fraught with complexity and deadlines and, quite honestly, money, because there's steps along the way where deposits have to be made and commitments have to be followed up with money, and all of those things interrupt that path. And I always say when a student walks into an office or a campus, we should be celebrating that, because that student has demonstrated already an incredible amount of determination and information gathering and diligence and perseverance to be on a college campus in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Abby, tell us a little bit about your journey into college, just so that people could maybe make a few comparisons and think about maybe how it might be different for someone like you.
So I was reached out by a program here in Wisconsin that helps with kind of that transitional period. I qualified, but not every foster youth qualifies for those types of programs, which is weird. There are very weird age restrictive cutoffs to a lot of foster care, you know, incentives in very loose quotations that students get. There's a considerably large and incredibly helpful scholarship that I qualified for, but someone like Andrew, who was in foster care for, you know, a short amount of time when he was younger, he wouldn't qualify for it if he decided to go to college later. So that's a huge thing, because you see a lot of foster youth going into it a lot younger than me. Out of the foster youth that I've met who've now aged out of care, they were in foster care anywhere between 8 to 12. That's kind of like the sweet spot. Some were younger, but again, younger kids have more of an area for reunification than older children. So I was able to reach out to them and do, you know, my FAFSA, get that stuff done. But again, that is only because I was independent. And, you know, the dependent tax thing is a huge barrier for some people, especially those who are considered, you know, wards of the state, wards of court, or who are orphaned. There may be additional barriers with income restrictions from relatives who may have taken them in, who they've lived with for a considerable amount of time. And then that comes back to bite them later when FAFSA is going through their information and seeing how much money they qualify for. So that's huge. Living on campus is another huge barrier that students face. They're, you know, fostering success has really exploded, and I'm very glad that it has in our school systems, but it wasn't always that way. So now you have foster youth who are like, I don't know if I'm going to even have a community at this campus, whether it's a two-year or a four-year. And at a two-year, they don't have the option of living on campus. So then they have to think of something else, which is unfortunate that, you know, students don't feel like they have a community or a place to belong in a place where they may really, really excel and succeed, because they're incredibly smart and resilient, and those are skills that you can't be taught. You need to learn those skills. So for me, you know, coming into foster care much later in my life, I still had familial connections. I know my biological family. My foster parents are my parents. I say that I'm adopted, not actually, but, you know, doesn't matter. So, you know, I had those people to help me, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. And that's why I've spent so much time, you know, working with Fostering Success, being a peer mentor, working with the camps that we have for foster youth, because they're not probably going to have that same connection as I do. They're not going to have the same people who are rooting for them. And a lot of things that, you know, I had, they won't. And something about foster care and people is that a lot of people in foster care are temporary. Once you're 18, your social worker, gone. I tried to reach out to my social worker, I think a couple months after I aged out, just to ask a question. I heard nothing. That plus really any other person they've met through like county or state systems are gone. They don't care. Some of them do, absolutely. But I've had heard majority of stories where they're just like, okay, you're 18. See you later. So I think those are all incredibly important things to think about when examining how foster youth transition into college is how, you know, what are their barriers? How do we address those barriers? What are things that are helping them outside? You know, do they have family extended? Do they have other support people in their lives to really help them? And if they don't, how can we make those connections with these youth to support them, whether that's through secondary education, workforce training, or other means for them to survive?
Okay. So Andrew, I'm I'm going to ask you to kind of zoom out from that picture that Abby has shared with us to talk about sort of systemic things around college and foster care and aging out at 18 that might be helpful to understanding this challenge.
Yeah, so I think there are a number of things. Some of these have actually very easy kind of solutions to them. For example, talking about when a young person ages out of foster care, there are things that states can do to avoid a lot of the things that happen there simply by, for example, automatically enrolling kids into extended care rather than requiring them to opt in and requiring a bureaucracy to pay attention and say, oh, this child needs to have this happen. Just have it do it automatically. But I think also the other thing that's important is to recognize that kids who leave foster care at 18 do not have the supports and the network of family that other kids have. So if you just imagine a child from a reasonably well-off family, for family who has a family. Mm-hmm. When a foster child goes ahead and has trouble with rent, they have someone who can step in. If they have trouble buying food, they can have someone, call someone, they have someone who steps in. If they have trouble buying books, they can have someone who steps in. If they're feeling depressed, lonely, they have someone who can step in. All of those things are largely missing for an 18-year-old who's already gone through severe trauma in their life, and quite often they feel alone. So when you ask foster kids, you know, what is that feeling? What did you leave foster care with? Overwhelmingly, one of the things they will say is loneliness. And the thing is what a university or a college can do for that is tremendous. It can offer them a future. It can offer them an education. It also, quite frankly, can offer them very basic things like housing and food and those sort of supports that they need if it's done right. And so what we need to do is take a look at how we go ahead and connect colleges and universities to reach down to high school students to make sure that they get that financial aid form filled out, to make sure that they understand which colleges they can go to and what offers them, so they can understand what kind of financial assistance they'll get and what they won't, and to hopefully, and this really came up, I think, really poignantly just now, is to have them connected to an adult, have them know that there's someone they can call, quite frankly, just put someone who has their back, and that's what's missing. And so that's what explains, in part, that statistic that Gail talked about, we have 20% entering college, and then that plummeting down to 2-3%. And just to step back for a moment and to take a look at what happens to that young person who is in college and then left, what did they leave with? They don't leave with a degree, but they leave with often is a pile of debt. So that's what they've got. And what that does is it severely hampers their ability to move forward. That affects things like credit ratings, right? Finding an apartment. It also, in the largest sense, affects whether they're going to choose to go back to college and try again, because they're already looking at a mountain of debt, and whether they want to go ahead and try to get more debt. And so what we need to do is really take a look at that. And I think when young people enter college, what universities and two-year colleges need to recognize is that this is a partnership, that we know the risk that's here, and rather than placing that entire risk on a young person, a college and a university ought to say, you know what, we're going to take part of that risk. We're going to go ahead and take a look at the debt that you're going to acquire and how we can manage that for you. Or we're going to set up programs that go ahead and address mental health needs and talk to you if you're sad, if you're depressed. Talk to you if you need something. And that's what that kind of partnership needs to be made. And that's what things like Guardian Scholars programs do for young people in colleges and universities.
And let me just take a moment to reintroduce. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the importance of foster youth college success is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. I'm veering off of my original list of questions a little bit, but I think what we just heard from both Abby and Andrew were some of the challenges to being in college. And Gail, I know that you probably have pretty close at your fingertips. What are the advantages to us to have people graduate? What happens to the foster youth who manage to get through college, and how is that beneficial to citizens who may not even have thought of this?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And, you know, our students that are supported on a campus, I always say there's kind of three pieces to the puzzle. And this is just from my experience, and Abby, Andrew, others may have other ideas as well on this. But students that I see succeeding in the best possible way are the ones that have some sort of planned and intentional transition after aging out of care and coming into college. So the students that, and there's a handful of them that I actually, when I worked in the college, was able to meet before they came to campus, making that connection is incredibly helpful, because walking into an office where you, in a college where you know someone already, and having that trust and knowing that the person that they worked with while they were in care has a connection with that person as well. I mean, that's very helpful for the students to find their place, get the support, and start building that trust that they have a place to go whenever they have questions. Mm-hmm. The other piece that I think is really important is that community of support. So having others in the program that you can share experiences with and not feel like you're outing yourself as being a foster child. I've talked to students who said that was the most important part of the program, was being able to be in that community of support and just be themselves. And that's something that they value quite a bit. And then the third piece of it, and I think Andrew talked a little bit about this, is the financial challenges. And we are doing a great job in Wisconsin creating the campus-based supports, the community of supports, but we're kind of lagging on the financial support. And I think that we're all very aware of the high cost of higher education. I think it's in the news and everywhere all the time these days. And that's true. And the students that have the most amount of financial need are seeing the gap between the federal and state grant amounts that are available and that cost of tuition. So that gap keeps growing because the grants are not keeping up with the costs of attending college. And so more often than not, when a student was struggling to stay in college, it was related to financial needs and barriers. So one car repair, one broken cell phone or something like that can completely derail a student's ability to re-enroll in the next semester. And we have some emergency funds and some limited funds available to help students, but if they are not connected to the program and the funds are not available, those kinds of financial barriers really can derail students. The students who receive the most comprehensive financial aid packages and get scholarships on their own. I know Abby receives not only the Brighter Star or ETV funding, she also receives some merit scholarships, and having those extra financial resources really help the students feel financially secure and able to focus on studies and not spend 30 or 40 hours a week working. When the students graduate, those who do graduate, the benefit of that is, again, contributing to their communities and finding work and becoming homeowners and raising children who they can share their experiences with and better prepare those children for success in higher education. It provides them with this opportunity for independence and adult life without the constant threat of food insecurity, housing insecurity, homelessness. And I think that's something that every child should have an opportunity to strive for. And ultimately, when the students do graduate, it would be nice for them not to be, riddled with mounds of student loan debt as well, because that's just adding another layer of challenge to a student who's already really done amazing things by getting through college in the first place. Abby, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to mention talking about like access to financial aid that really helps benefit, you know, the experience of someone who's in college and when they get out of college. For me, like you mentioned with merit scholarships, I was actually given the opportunity to speak in front of about 600 students, faculty, and donors who provide the foundation scholarships at UW-Stout. And I had people come up to me after, you know, the fact and told me, they're like, hey, like, we never even knew Fostering Success existed. We didn't even know this was a program on campus. Like, that's fantastic. And, you know, I was so happy to be able to do that, because now how many more people know? How many more people would be willing to, you know, put more money in towards a specific scholarship for foster youth? I was also awarded the Barb Schmetzel Promise Award out of Dunn County in memory of Barb. And after talking with her husband and, you know, discussing with him the kind of barriers that I had to getting my education and how I really want to use that to better, like, I will be working in this community or very close to it. You know, I'm going to be going to work back at the same group home that I lived in for a year when I was in care. I want to work for the Wisconsin or Minnesota DOC. Since they are both closely related to each other, we see a lot of back and forth between them. A lot of, you know, foster youth who graduate, you know, they don't move 10 states away. They stay local because they see the need. They see, you know, what they can do to help change things. So I think that's another huge benefit, again, to just, like Gail said, you know, our local economy. Look at all of these talented with lived experience individuals we have to help some of the most, you know, underdeveloped and impoverished communities that we have in our community. You know, people who are formerly incarcerated, our homeless population, those under the poverty line. So those were all. I completely agree with Gail on that.
Okay. So Andrew, I wonder if you can just kind of put this in the national picture. Does this sound familiar? Are there any states that are really doing this right? Sort of where does Wisconsin fall on the spectrum?
Yeah, what I'd really like to just for a moment say is mm-hmm. talk just Abby mm-hmm. and what she's talking about and the kind of resiliency that she's showing, kind of bravery that she's showing, and quite frankly, the kind of kindness. And that's what you see in so many foster youth. They've been through so much, and they still have that. And it's really remarkable. And so I just, a shout out to you, Abby, for everything you're doing. It's so important. When it comes to other states, some states do it a little better, but no one is getting it quite right. So you see this in the numbers. The numbers that Gail was talking about, that dramatic fall, right, from 20 to 2%, that's occurring across the country. Okay, that failure to go ahead and have transitions between 2 and 4 year colleges, things that we ought to be doing right, that if we paid attention to, we could do right to make sure that credits are transferred appropriately. We can do that. We can do that if we pay attention to it. Things like making sure that a college works with a local housing program that foster children may be eligible for, so they avoid homelessness. So we take that stress. I mean, imagine the stress of feeling that you might be homeless and then being expected to get up and go to class. It's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that you see kids who do that, young people who do that. These are extraordinary people, and we need to support them. The other thing that I'd say is this need to really, and Gail mentioned that fear of being outed. And just for a moment to talk about that, this is nothing that is the result of something they've done. This is the result of the kind of trauma that they've gone through. This is the result of a sense of embarrassment from where they've come, which they've got nothing to do about. If anything, what they've done is they've overcome it. But it's that need to address that and to address those kind of mental health needs that they have, to address them sensitively and kindly. And so when you do that, what you see is incredible success stories. You see those dreams of those 70% of foster kids who want to go to college actually doing it. And so that's what we need to do. And that's what, this is not just Wisconsin, this is across the country, what we need to do. And some of these things, you know, I look at it and is it really that hard to go ahead and have someone say, you know, we're going to get you housing. We're going to make sure, we're going to take that off your plates. You know, we're going to get you someone you can talk to. We're going to take that off your plates to just take some of these things away. So again, I just, listening to Abby, I just want to say how honored I feel to be here with her. And what she does and the work she's doing. And thank you. And Gail, too. I guess Gail's an awful lot. Thank you, Andrew.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yes, you're being an excellent spokesperson, Abby, for all of the things that you can accomplish and also your sensitivity to other people who have had struggles. And I would just like to say, like, I keep thinking about this time because I interviewed Gail and some of her colleagues. I guess it was in 2021, about fostering success at the various UW campuses. And that was when my son was still in high school. Well, now he's a sophomore in college. And I just think about the process of finding an apartment for him was so fraught. And we have two very highly paid jobs in our household. He couldn't get one without proof of both of our incomes and our mortgage payment. There was
lots not.
Yes, well, this is it's a very competitive housing market. Let's just
same here in Menominee. Yeah. Actually, it's bad. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to where, like, through my independent living program, my last six-ish months of being in foster care, I moved out. I lived independently. I graduated high school living where I am now, which viewers can't see, but obviously you guys can see. And without that, I would not have had a place to live. And then I would have had to live on campus, which has its own genuinely traumatic struggles. I lived in a group home with a bunch of teenagers with very specific needs and issues, you know, for a year. I, you know, very blatantly was like, I will not go to college if I have to live in a dorm room because I do not want to feel, you know, so helpless in a living situation ever again. But I had the privilege of making that decision, and I had the privilege of getting to say, oh, well, I don't want to do that. And I reached out to my social worker and said, we need to figure something out. But again, even that is just showing the level that varies of privilege among foster youth.
Right. And just the barriers that you face that aren't even, you know, like, you couldn't even do the thing that we had to do to get our child an apartment. You couldn't do it. Nobody would give you one. There would be no way.
Nope. So that's... My social worker basically was my co-signer. The state of Wisconsin was basically my co-signer. And, you know, my landlord luckily is private. So, like, we have a very personal relationship. But, again, for bigger companies who are two cities away from where you're trying to rent or lease. Mm-hmm. There you go. If I needed my parents' income, what parents are going to give me their income?
Right.
Yeah. I technically, quote unquote, don't have parents in the state eyes.
Right. Let me reintroduce again. You are listening to WGTDHDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the importance of foster youth college success is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in the discussion there. So I can't believe it. We only have about 12 minutes left. So I wanted to ask you all, our listeners really enjoy hearing stories about the programs we feature. Can each of you tell us a success story, either your own or someone you know, that has left foster care and had some unexpected opportunity through their education? Andrew, I don't know if you feel like starting. Maybe you probably know a zillion of these stories.
So I do. I don't know if it's a zillion, but it's a good number. And what I'd say is, you know, I can talk about, I don't want to use his true name, but we'll call him Bobby, right? What happened with Bobby? Bobby actually had someone from a local two-year college contact him before he reached age 18. That person actually made sure that Bobby had a birth certificate in hand, that had a social security number in hand. That quite frankly, that social security number hadn't been hacked, which actually occurs all the time. That allowed Bobby to not have to worry about not having a credit score, not having a cosigner, because it's that transition. Now, when Bobby went on campus to that two-year college, it was hard. It wasn't smooth for Bobby. Bobby stumbled. But the thing is that when Bobby stumbled, Bobby had someone on campus who he could trust. And that level of trust is so important because everything in that boy's life said, do not trust a system. Do not trust someone you don't know. And many of the people you do. Because Bobby had that, Bobby actually left that two-year college and he went to UCLA. And it worked smoothly. And it was done the way it was supposed to. And Bobby graduated. Bobby has a job. And Bobby is a successful, happy, not always perfect human being, but Bobby has had what all of us deserve. And that's what we can do.
Great. Thank you so much for that story. Gail, do you want to go next?
I was thinking maybe Abby should go next, and okay. Then I'll just maybe follow up with some updates from Wisconsin.
Okay, thanks. Next. Okay. So Abby, you've given us a little bit of your success story. I'm sure you could tell us more because I bet there's a lot to that story, just having heard you so far. But you're also working with other foster youth at UW-Stout. So maybe you want to tell us a little bit about those folks.
Yeah, I work with there are so many words I could use to describe the students that I work with and the students that I interact with who may be interested in joining higher ed. And it's genuinely just resilient. That's the best all-encompassing word that I can think of. I've had so many opportunities to answer questions and be able to really connect with these students. You know, they see me and they know me and they know if I have a problem, if I need help, like I can go to, you know, not just me, but also, you know, our advisor who works in our office and really anyone else who, you know, they know is going to help them. And I've set up and talked to, you know, my professors in my multiple classes that I've had, trying to kind of set up a fostering success ally partnership to where, you know, these are professors, these are faculty on campus who support the, you know, message of fostering success, support what we're trying to do, and would be 100% willing to help a student or accommodate their specific needs if they needed them. And every professor that I've talked to who knew or didn't know of fostering success, it's like, sold, count me in. I'll help my students in whatever way possible. I don't care what their background is. I don't care where they come from. And that has been super, super, you know, breath of fresh air for me. Because as Andrew mentioned, when you're taught to not trust people and you're taught and, you know, you're consistently disappointed in adults in your life, you don't tend to give that up easily. And I'm really glad that, you know, not just faculty, professors, but students are also, you know, being open and they're learning to trust these people so they can get the best college experience that they can have. And I really, you know, I love being able to sit down and talk, you know, with students about what are your plans after graduation? How are you doing? Even just that, you know, and it may seem small, but even just that small little check-in, how are you doing, has just gone such a long way in, you know, really tying it all together for me, it's just so surreal to be able to do what I'm doing with my experience, because again, I never really thought that I would ever be doing anything like this. I just recently got introduced to YAC, which is Youth Advisory Council, in Region 6, which encompasses a big chunk in the northwestern part of the state here. And I'm hopefully running for an advisory position, so I'll be doing that as well. And I'm really excited, and I really hope I can. So, you know, I can go and lobby down in Madison on a bi-monthly basis to lawmakers about the importance of foster care. But I wouldn't be able to do it without the support of not only my, you know, peers, but also just the students that I work with, because they're a huge reason as to why I do this, because I'm graduating soon. It's not going to impact me anymore, but it's going to impact them for months and years to come. So I really want it to be lasting for them.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's a great example for listeners of what can happen and how Abby's able to lift up others. What is it? Carry as you climb is the phrase, I think. So well done, Abby. Gail, let's hear some updates about Wisconsin, what's coming up, and ways that maybe our listeners could get involved if they wanted to.
Absolutely. So I wanted to mention that Wisconsin is making really good strides in providing programs of support on our campuses. So there'll be links in the notes that will take you to the page of the UW system, fostering success page, and a list of all the campuses that are currently offering programs of support and their contact information. I've been made aware of a program between the Wisconsin Technical College system and the private college system in Wisconsin. There's two pilot programs that are working together to help with that transfer that Andrew had mentioned, to make sure that the students who are attending the technical colleges are getting support and help selecting classes that will successfully transfer to the private college. And then there's the transition to another college where they've already visited and been connected to some of those folks. I also did a search the other day, and I found that Western Technical College and Northeast Wisconsin Technical College in Green Bay also have specific programs of support for this student population. Again, where we're lacking is kind of in that financial support and making sure that our students are able to focus on their studies and not on housing and food and tuition expenses at the detriment of their, you know, ability to stay enrolled. So excited to be partnering with the UW System campuses and Andrew in bringing an event to Wisconsin in September. So right when the school year begins in the fall, Andrew will be coming to Wisconsin, and we will be hosting an event. And if you are interested in learning more about the event, you can email Gail Menzel at, my last name is M-E-N-T-Z, as in zebra, E-L, the letter S, and the number 5 at Gmail. And I will happily send you the dates and the information to register as they become available, but we're super excited to have Andrew joining us in Wisconsin to talk about his experience and things that Wisconsin can do to ensure that we are providing an experience and a graduation for this underrepresented and very amazing student population.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks all of you. Abby Austin, I don't know if anybody's ever said this to you, but you could also change your name to Abby Awesome, because you are pretty amazing. So thank you.
Thanks, Garrett.
Andrew Bridge, thank you so much for joining us and for all of your work at the national level and making sure that people stay informed on all of this.
It was a real honor to be here with all of you. Thank you.
Yes. And Gail, thank you for being here and being continuing to be a mentor and an advocate for these students that you've worked with for so long and will continue to. You've been listening to WGTV HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the importance of foster youth college success is archived at WGTV.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again. Thank you all.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
I'm Gregory Berg, and on Monday's morning show, I speak with Carol Mithers about her remarkable book, Rethinking Rescue, which is the story of a remarkable woman named Lori Weiss, who does pet rescue